This morning we'll be studying from the book of Ecclesiastes, chapter 3, and we'll be beginning at verse 1 of chapter 3. Remember, we're looking at life from the perspective of a person who observes and thinks and considers, tries to draw conclusions from all that he or she sees as they observe the happenings of life. And that this also is the viewpoint that a person would have who was an Israelite. This was written at the time when there were kings in Israel, and when Israel as a nation was God's covenant people to present his truth to the world, many things were happening to them as a nation. We need to remember also that this has recorded in it the experiments and the experiences of a king in Israel who in his attempt to understand life often applied foolish ways hoping to find out something more definite than he could by the application of wisdom. Many times we think we can find out the truth by experimentation when all along we have the truth revealed to us in the wise words of those who've lived before us, or we find them written explicitly in the Word of God. So here is an attempt of a man who's considered to be the wisest man who lived other than Jesus to understand life and all of its ups and downs and ins and outs apart from divine revelation. Sort of the frustration that humans feel when they try to understand what's happening to them without looking at the Word of God and without looking at the work of God. We have a saying today that's come to us from the political circles, and it came about because politicians realized that their standing was extremely unstable. And it was a senator who observed that what goes around comes around. And if you think about it, he's trying to say that if you're really riding a crest of popularity and you are reaping where others have not sown, and every seed you plant comes up a flower, and every dollar you invest makes 10 more, and every time you open your mouth, wise sayings issue forth, and your people adore you, and your comrades in Congress hold you in the highest esteem. And yet in the same room, there's a man who holds his head in anguish. His eyes are filled with tears. Every time he says something, it backfires. Every time he invests something, it loses money. He's been misquoted, made mistakes. His constituents seem to hate him. He knows he'll never be reelected. His peers hold him in contempt. The senator was trying to say, just look at this man who's down, look at the man who's up, and remember that what goes around comes around. He's trying to say, be careful. You may be there one of these days. We have a lot of sayings like that. Life has its ups and downs. Life has its thrills. Life has its sorrows. There's a rainy day ahead for all of us. Just continually we affirm that life is a series of things. It's sort of cyclical. There's the days when we're just filled with happiness and bliss, and then there are days when we weep because of the immeasurable grief that has befallen us. The writer of Ecclesiastes has chosen to couch that in phrases such as, to everything there is a season and a time to every purpose under the heaven. And then he gives us some 14 pairs of opposites to illustrate the fact that life is filled with things that are opposite. And the word times is mentioned some 28 times in these verses of Scripture that we'll look at today. So he's saying that things change. And there are always opposites out there for you and me as we live here on this earth. And he begins by the simplest of things, the simplest of observations, and that is a time to be born and a time to die. That's for me and that's for you. There was a time when someone held you up and said, it's a boy or it's a girl. And there'll be a time when people will gather because it's your funeral. There is a time, a season. It's cyclical. Men are born and men die. But remember, that's not just someone to whom this happens. It happens to you and it happens to me. I was born and therefore I must die. A time to be born and a time to die. A time to plant and a time to pluck up that which is planted. There is seed time and harvest time. There's a time when all that we seem to be able to do is to spend our energy in planting. And the harvest seems a long way off. But it eventually comes, and the sickle is thrust into the harvest, and we rejoice in that which God has given us. But we never have the harvest without the time of planting. Neither do we have the time of planting without the time of harvest. A time to kill and a time to heal. Now that doesn't mean that God ordains killing. It doesn't mean that God orders killing, although at the time that this was written, when Israel was a nation, there were times when God commanded the Israelites to go to war, and there were times when God commanded the Israelites to kill. And that doesn't mean that God was unjust. The God of the Old Testament and the God of the New Testament are the same God, and God was a God of love in the Old Testament, and God is a God of love in the New Testament. But it had to do with their position on earth. It had to do with what God wanted them to do in preserving their integrity as a religious nation and the problems that they had from neighboring nations who were pagan, who sought to exterminate them. And I think it means that in my life and in your life, there will be a time when I am affected and touched some way by killing. And there will be a time when my life is touched by time to heal and to put things back together. As the writer states, a time to break down and a time to build up. You'll be affected sometimes in your life by things that have to be broken down. And you'll be affected by things that have to be built up. Time to weep and a time to laugh. And sometimes they're not separated by many days or many months. But in your lifetime, there'll be a time when your emotions will lead you to weep. And in your lifetime, there'll be a time when you, by your emotions, will laugh because things are well, or things are humorous, or things are funny. A time to mourn and a time to dance. This word dance simply means to be elated. There's a time when all of us mourn. But that mourning will pass, and again we can rejoice and be elated and be happy. We never live in one emotional state. And we shouldn't expect to, and we shouldn't want to, and if we could, we shouldn't. I have very little confidence in those people who believe that mankind ought to wear a continual smile. That every time we meet someone, we ought to shake hands and be very positive and smile and say, things are just wonderful and I've never been happier. Things are just so happy. You see, that comes from the name it and claim it gospel. People who say, if you'll say it, it'll be that way. That's a lie. It isn't true. And there's not anything wrong with mourning. In fact, it seems silly for people not to mourn when the occasion calls for mourning. Then again, a person who mourns continually has lost sight of many of the great things of life, and they really don't understand life as they should. The person who wears a continual smile will sooner or later be committed, because they do not have mental balance. The person who mourns all the time without ever smiling is also mentally unbalanced. I didn't say crazy, I said out of balance. There's a time in your life when you'll mourn, and there's a time in your life when you'll be elated. A time to cast away stones, and a time to gather stones together. The stones just never stay in the right place. You ever notice that really men are always gathering stones and tearing stones down or casting them away? We're always moving them. We're never comfortable with them where they are because life demands this constant change. When I first came to Little Rock, some of the very first places I ever visited were the apartments on Preston Drive. I remember I visited a medical student on Preston Drive here in Southwest Little Rock. You may not know Preston Drive. You probably know Sin City. They were new apartments, beautiful apartments, and expensive apartments. And now the city's arguing over who is supposed to tear them down. Things change. And that's the whole idea. Nothing ever stays the same except God. Everything will change. If you're riding a crest of success and everything is breaking in your favor and every word you speak is wise and draws complimentary comment from those who hear you speak, and if every investment turns up to be a wise investment and all the people you're in contact with you continually speak higher and higher of you, and everything you do is just one upward movement, just wait. And you're saying that's the most, the meanest, most pessimistic attitude you could have, preacher. I didn't say I wanted it to happen to you. I didn't say that's what I planned and hoped would happen to you. I'm saying that life happens to you, and life is not a constant. It is a series of opposites and conflicts. A time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing. Now, that doesn't mean that a man and his wife become angry at each other and no longer embrace. It means that in a lifetime, there are times when you're near your loved ones and you may embrace them, but there'll be a time when you'll be far away. It may be business, it may be war, it may be something you have no control over, but there'll be a time when you'll not be near enough to embrace the people that you love. You'll not be in a circumstance where you can physically touch the people in your family. It's a time of separation, literally. A time to get or seek, and a time to lose. There have been times when you got and bought. And then there are times in our own church family when fire and flood took away what you had. And it wasn't because you had done anything wrong. It wasn't because God was punishing you. You were simply caught up in that circumstance that happens to all people. And perhaps you were led deeper into the experience than others. But if we all live long enough, and I think that's a statistically correct thing to say, that if we all live long enough, these things will happen to us. We accumulate, and there's nothing wrong with accumulation. The Bible isn't condemning accumulation. The Bible is simply saying that when we accumulate, there are times, or will come a time, when you have to stand aside and see it. Like Black Friday or Black Thursday or whatever day it is when we lose so much of what we thought we had. It's not a form of punishment or chastisement. Sometimes God uses these things, but that isn't always the case. It's just that this is the way life is. A time to keep and a time to cast away. I guess it's saying, you know, we bring home new things and we glory in them, and then we put them in a carport sale a few years later. I remember, I guess about 1973 or so, we'd lived in this new parsonage for just a few years, 2 or 3 years. And one Saturday morning, and I'm going to be honest, I'm not going to lie like a lot of you people do. One Saturday morning, we were watching cartoons. Now, some of you would have said my children were watching cartoons, okay? But I'm going to tell the truth. On a Saturday morning, we were watching cartoons. Had a black and white set, and it would run this way a while and run that way a while, and then it'd flip this way a while. Got in my car, went right up the street, bought a new Zenith color TV. Didn't pay cash for it. You know where it is now? It's in the garage. A lot of stuff stacked on top of it. I don't know why I keep it. It was new. Now it's old. That's the way everything is. That's the way you are. That's the way I am. We get and we keep. But there's a time to keep and a time to cast away. Why? Because it's used and old and worn out. It has no value. A time to rend and a time to sow. That's true of our garments and it's true of our lives. There are times when things are rent, they are torn apart, and there are times when things are put back together.
time to keep silence and a time to speak.
And how well we all know that.
A time to love and a time to hate.
What does that mean? Well, it means that you will love and you will be loved. And you will experience love. Your mother's love, your father's love, your brother's and sister's love, Christian love, husband love, wife love. Yes, there's a time when you will experience love, and there's a time when you will experience hate. Hate from others, and probably hate in your own heart directed toward others. It is an emotional experience that all human beings will be involved in one way or another. You will be loved and others will love you. And if you never hate anyone, I can assure you that you will be the object of hate. Just because you don't hate someone doesn't mean that you'll never feel what it means to be hated and despised. For Jesus himself, who never hated anyone and who loved every human, was despised and hated and rejected. It's just saying that these are emotions that exist in the world, and you'll feel them, or you'll be the objects of them. A time of war and a time of peace. Some of you remember the war to end all wars. You remember the armistice. 1918. You remember Pearl Harbor. Some of you know very well where you were when you heard that the Japanese had bombed Pearl Harbor. You remember very well the declaration of war that was issued by radio by Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And some of you went to war. Some of you remember being called back into uniform in the Korean conflict. Some of you were in the Vietnam War. And as well as knowing where you were and remembering the times of danger and death that you were involved in, you probably remember where you were when peace was declared. Probably remember the celebration and the joy. An armistice was signed. Surrender unconditional. All the agony of the 38th parallel and all of the negotiating at Panmunjom. The shame when Saigon fell. Finally, a long, drawn-out negotiation in Paris until finally, with a whimper, the war in Vietnam ended. Is there a time of war in your life? Quite possibly. Is there a time of peace in your life? Quite possibly. I'm 55 years old, and I've seen three of these. As I said, some here have seen all four of these wars that I've mentioned and rejoiced in all of the peace announcements that have been made. We have not ended war. With all of the things that have occurred in the last 6 months, we have not ended war. In fact, we may have even sown the seeds of the next war by the peace that we believe we've accomplished. Now in verse 9, after making all of these contradictory or opposite statements, the question is asked, what profit hath he that worketh in that wherein he laboreth. Now the word profit literally means what's left. And after we've experienced all these things, what do we have left? After you've had your time of war and time of peace and time of laughter and time of sadness and time of mourning and time of rejoicing and time of rending and time of putting together and so on. What after all of these things, what is there left that you can rejoice in? We've labored and labored and labored and labored and labored and labored through all of these things. Now what do I have in the bank? What do I have that's profit? And I can just look back on my life, all the things that have happened to me, starting at Driftwood and Lynn and Strawberry and Walnut Ridge and Batesville, and then Blytheville and Illinois and Florida and back to Little Rock, Forest City, marriage, four boys, four grandchildren, three and a half or two-thirds or something like that, and well on the way to four. And you have the same thing. I mean, you've been overseas. Some of you have been under the seas. You've rejoiced and you've wept and you've accumulated and you've seen it all go. You've put it together and it's burned down and you've just seen this happen over and over again. And like myself, some of you are gray-haired and we're saying to ourselves, what really do we have left? Well, you know, if there's not a God, we don't have much left. And if there's not a thing, it's honesty and integrity and Jesus Christ and eternal values, and you know, it just, as the writer tells us, vanity and vexation of spirit. I have seen the travail which God hath given to the sons of men to be exercised in it. Now he begins to talk about how trying to change all of this and to avoid all of this simply is a lot of hard work that really doesn't in any way produce change. And rather than trying to change it so that it never happens, we need to develop a relationship with God and have such a knowledge of God and His ways and His works that we can rejoice when all these things are happening to us. That's the secret. Not that we can change life. And that's what we've always tried to tell ourselves. It's the humanistic view of life. We can change life. We can equip our children with education and with a philosophy, and we can so train them and so equip them that their houses won't burn and their children won't die and they won't lose jobs and they won't get sick. Well, we can change things for them. You know, I didn't get to go to school. I'll tell you, I send my kids and they'll get a college education and they can get their degrees. And brother, they won't have the same kind of misery that I had in my life. And what we find out is that oftentimes the misery is just as much and maybe more. And that was our fallacy. Our thinking was wrong. And in laboring to change life so that no one will ever be disappointed and no one will ever be unhappy and we'll never have a funeral is a dream that will never come true until Jesus comes and establishes that kind of society himself.
He hath made everything beautiful in his time. And what this verse of scripture means, the word beautiful means things that work together. And in that way, it's beautiful. It's like a tapestry where everything is woven and put together. And since it's symmetrical and we can see a design in all of it, we say it's beautiful. And this is what the writer means. God has made everything that happens so that it can be a tapestry that will glorify God rather than condemn God and condemn man. You know, we look at things and we condemn God. God doesn't love, or there would not be this poverty. God doesn't love, or there wouldn't be this sickness. And yet, if we have wisdom and understanding, we can look at all things and say that God is wise and God is filled with love. And the things that have happened to us have fallen out rather to the glory of God and our own personal benefit. He hath made everything beautiful in his own time. Also has set the world in their heart so that no man can find out the work that God maketh from the beginning to the end. What's he mean? Just means I can't understand it all. No matter how hard I try, I just can't understand it all. I can't see the tapestry. I can only see a little bit here and a little bit there, and I just don't understand the whole thing because I can't see the whole picture. I can only guess at what it means, but occasionally I can see some refractions and some shadows, and it makes me believe that God is in it, though I do not comprehend it all. I know that there is no good thing that comes out of our seeking to change these circumstances. But for a man to rejoice and to do good in his life, that's out of all the things that we endure and all the things that we encounter, he is saying, as I look at it, the best thing that we can do is adjust ourselves so that we can rejoice and do good in our life. And that if we can submit ourselves to life and to God and eat and drink and enjoy eating and drinking, enjoy our labor, and recognize that even these things are a gift of God, we can find some happiness in life. And we can depend on this, that whatsoever God does, it shall be forever. This kind of cycle will not occur in heaven. My brother, there will be no birth and funerals in heaven. There will be no sowing and reaping in heaven. There will be no casting away of stones and gathering of stones in heaven. There will be no building up and tearing down in heaven. Whatever God does, it will be eternal and forever. And we can depend upon that. And because God has said that, and we can depend upon that, then we should fear God and stand in awe of God that finally there's something that's not going to sink. Finally there's something that's not going to burn. Finally there's something where there'll be no separations, where there'll be no partings, where there'll be no grief. There'll just be a constant source of pleasure derived from our contact and presence in God, our presence in God's place. I know that whatsoever God doeth, it shall be forever. Nothing can be put to it, nor anything taken from it. And God doeth it that men should fear before him. That which hath been is now, and that which is to be hath already been. And God requireth that which is past. What's he saying? What goes around comes around. And we'll answer to God for the way we react to all the things that happen to us in life.